as we move along, and thank you, David, for that great presentation. Our next topic we're going to discuss is sustainability and how it can impact your small business. This is a topic we've looked at just, you know, skipping a stone across the pond over the last few years, and we want to take a little more in-depth look at it because we are seeing an increased environmental interest in the marketplace among retailers, among their customer base that is flowing back upstream to producers and raw material suppliers, et cetera. So this is a topic that we think as an organization is going to grow in influence over the next few years rather quickly, or much more quickly than it has been in the past. And I think this is an opportunity. We had a great opportunity to pick up an excellent speaker with Dan Krohn. And Dan is the lead sustainability director for Becker Underwood, which includes all of Becker Underwood's subsidiaries and Color Biotics. He directs all of their national and international sustainability efforts and develops sustainability teams at different plant sites around the country, well, around the world, I guess you are, currently. And he's really been involved in this, and this is a dedicated effort of at least one company within our industry that's deeply engaged in the sustainability issue. And we've asked Daniel to come and tell us how they viewed the thing and what impact they have seen and what response they have seen in the different marketplace. Daniel has an MBA and a BA in biology, and he's been dealing with national organizations like One Planet, National Wildlife Fund, National Resources of Canada, involved in the carbon trading markets before that. And we did take a real heavy look at the carbon trading, carbon credits over the last few years. Maybe you can update us on what's going on there too. I'm pleased to introduce Daniel Krohn as our resident expert on sustainability. Daniel?
Thank you all for allowing me the opportunity to come speak with you guys today and kind of give you an idea of what sustainability is and maybe what it means to your business, what other companies are doing, and what we're doing. And hopefully you'll leave here with some tools and some ideas that you can take to your business, small business. And I understand that it's difficult being small businesses, medium-sized businesses, to hire someone to help you address this issue. So hopefully I can do that. And if you have questions or need help, you can talk to me afterwards or we can set up other times to discuss. So so what is sustainability and what do we do with it? Anybody have any ideas on what sustainability is, what you think it is? Don't be afraid to raise your hand. So most of the time when I do the training around the world and I ask that question, and a lot of times you get recycling, energy efficiency, things like that. And really when you start to dig into sustainability, you realize that it's much broader. There's more to it. And so I'm going to kind of talk about that as we go on through this. So. Okay, so I'll just give you an overview of Becker Underwood quickly. We make biologicals and specialty products, inoculants, seed coatings, landscape coatings, and colorants, biological crop protection, and a lot of different things. You can see that this is kind of where I get to travel quite often. So, yes, I have lots of miles. And my carbon footprint is very big, which is a shame on me for being sustainability. Reporting units, business sectors, you can all kind of see that. And yes, Color Bionics is part of it. Basically, I work for all of these people. That's kind of how I view it. I support their efforts however they want to do it. So development that meets the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. That's the definition of sustainable development. That definition came from the UN out of the Brundtland Commission. And that was done because there was some concern based on some books, Natural Capitalism, Silent Spring, written in the 60s, about this growing concern about environmental and social degradation. And so it kind of led to the 1992 Earth Summit. I don't know if any of you guys remember that, in Rio. Next year is actually their 20th anniversary, and they're going to have it there again. But it was also one of the first times, I'm not sure if any of you are familiar with David Suzuki. He's kind of, I would call, a radical in the environmental area. But he had his 12-year-old daughter speak to all of these powerful world leaders. And she started crying, and she basically blamed them for ruining her future. And that kind of has snowballed and started a lot of this stuff that you guys are starting to see and stuff you're starting to deal with, both as an industry and as a business. So, as you can see, this is the main reason for the reason for the Brundtland Commission and ultimately the Earth Summit and ultimately all of the things that you're dealing with today. So what is sustainability? So really there are three pillars to sustainability. There's economic sustainability, there's environmental sustainability, and then there's social sustainability. So now you can see that a lot of times we when we hear the word sustainability, we think it's purely an environmental thing. And it's really much broader than that. It's more of a solid business strategy or business model, as I would say. And when we talk about poor examples of economic sustainability, I think we could all say the U.S. government is a great example of terrible economic sustainability. You know, in the Crow Report, we heard about 10 years that one to one, $1 pays all the interest. So we have nothing left. It's unsustainable. And you can apply that to your small business too, or you can apply it to a large business. If you're not paying attention to your books, how you're making money, looking for opportunities to save money, product innovation, you're not going to be economically sustainable. And you're also not going to have, the rest of it doesn't matter then. Because if you're not a business and you're not operating economically, you have no environmental impact and you have no social impact. So the rest of it really doesn't matter. So then you have environmental sustainability. I should keep going. So we talked about economic sustainability a little bit. Keep moving on. So environmental sustainability. Using environmental resources, which all of our businesses rely upon. That could be in the form of ores to make metal. It could be trees to make landscape mulch. It could be water. We all rely on some sort of natural resource to run our business. That's the foundation. And so it's very important that as a business, that you pay attention to these concerns and you pay attention to resource depletion, because eventually it will affect all of us, whether that's a cost increase or we just don't have it and you have to scramble for a new solution. So it's important that we think about resource efficiency. So I also have a question for you guys to consider about environmental sustainability, because that's really the main focus for me being here. Are there environmental resources besides wood that you rely on as an industry or a company that will not replenish quickly or fast enough or not at all that may affect your industry in a negative way? And how do you address those? So we'll talk about social sustainability a little bit, maintaining or improving the quality of a life, so health, education, community efforts. You can see this picture. We did Iowa has an initiative to become the healthiest state in the U.S. Right now, I think currently they're 19th. And so our governor has started this Iowa Health Initiative, and they had a Start Somewhere walk. And so we had participants, both from Colorbotics and from Becker Underwood, do that. And their whole goal was to break a world record for the most people walking 1 kilometer in a day. And I think we had almost 300,000. And the original record was held by the Canadians. So I guess a little Iowa pride for you guys. So sustainability. One of the things that is always associated with this is just creating jobs. Creating jobs leads to stable communities and leads to disposable income, which helps kind of tie into economic sustainability, which then ties into environmental sustainability. After a while, you start looking at it, you can see why that picture, that original picture that I put up about sustainability, it's all integrated. It all depends on each other. It's kind of a circle of life, I suppose you could say. And so paying attention to social sustainability is just important. Whether you're looking internally at your employees, what are you doing to help them? Whether that's health and trying to reduce or keep your healthcare premiums stable, I'll say. They're probably going to go up. Or you're talking about education, or you're looking at communities, how you're impacting the community, how you can help that community through your business. So some of the business drivers for all of this, stuff that you guys are hearing about, dealing with, directly or indirectly. So brand value and reputation is a big one. You see a lot of giant global corporations, GE, IBM, they're doing it to protect their brand too. Coca-Cola, for Coca-Cola, their brand is everything. Everybody knows it anywhere in the world, whether you're in Nepal or you're in Alaska, everybody knows the Coca-Cola brand. And so that's their most valuable asset, besides maybe the recipe to make Coke, but nobody will ever get to see that. So it's protecting that brand. Government regulation, I'm sure that you guys have already dealt with that, especially with Bob was telling me about the, what's that program called?
BCAP.
So a wonderful government regulation for you, aimed at biomass and producing more biofuels, clean energy. And we saw how that kind of turned out. It affected your industry and your businesses, and kind of probably a waste of our taxpayer money again. Also, from a government regulation standpoint, the EPA and their greenhouse gas rule, that's been delayed again. Under the Clean Air Act, the EPA was going to mandate that reporting for anybody that has greenhouse gas footprint for, say, boilers or natural gas use, steam generation on site. If you produced over 25,000 metric tons of CO2 per year, you had to report. It was required. And so that reporting costs money. Costs money to hire someone to do it, whether it's a consultant or you do a full-time resource. And that would increase business costs. And, I'll give you kind of a rundown of the EPA thing and why it's good that we didn't get a cap and trade bill passed. So recent data came out. In Europe, they have a cap and trade system in the EU and then also in the UK. And it's probably putting them at a competitive disadvantage. And it's actually not even reducing their carbon footprint. Whereas in the United States, we don't have a cap and trade, and we've actually reduced our carbon foot over the past 10 years greater than Europe, who has a cap and trade. So not only are we staying at a competitive advantage, we're improving. And a lot of that has to do with just switching fuels, actually. But also there's a big push for renewable energy, energy efficiency. We continue to learn every day. Economic performance, so saving money, energy costs. We all know that energy is going to increase. I kind of look at it as there's three certainties in life. Death and taxes, and your energy is going to go up. So that's part of economic performance. Also, risk management, I think, is the biggest thing. I think that's kind of, as a business for Becker Underwood, we're trying to manage that risk, whether that's a regulatory risk, or it's a natural resource risk, or it's a social risk as far as we can't find qualified employees. We kind of look at sustainability as more of a risk management thing, because we want to be around for another 100 years. Stakeholder demand, so consumers, customers, suppliers, you guys are all dealing with this. Banks, insurance companies are really starting to get into the mix. The insurance companies and the banks is quite an interesting one. There's actually some stories out there, depending on where you are in the world, that if you're not doing anything to address sustainability, say reporting or things like that, you won't get a lower cost of capital from the bank. Or same with insurance rates. So it actually pays, depending on where you're at, to pay attention to sustainability and start to integrate it into your business. I don't know if this is going to play. No, it's not. So that's quite all right. So kind of the next where we're going with this is I'll give you some statistics about what's going on. So you kind of have an idea of what you can and should do. So there was a study, the Global 100 Most Sustainable Companies. This is done by a Corporate Knights, which is basically a magazine in Canada. And they were comparing it to the MSCI World Index for Sustainability. And they found that over a five-year period, that these companies that they considered the 100 most sustainable had a higher shareholder return, 55%, 16% above that MSCI benchmark. I mean, that's, especially during the recession, that's pretty amazing, actually. And there are a lot of factors that go into it, besides maybe laying people off, but anyway, so it pays to pay attention to it, especially economically. I find this one kind of interesting. So this is the savings rate in the United States. It actually goes clear back to the 60s, but you couldn't read any of it. So it started at 1970, and it slowly declined each year. Basically, the point being that as consumers, as citizens, we were not living economically sustainable lives. I think we can all kind of attest that. I know I'm guilty of it too. So, but with the recession, with job losses, people realized that they were very vulnerable and that they needed to address this. So you see the uptick towards the end as far as the savings rate. Interesting statistic for you. From the fourth quarter of 2007 to the first quarter of 2011, the U.S. consumer has paid down over $1.1 trillion in debt. That's part of the reason why our economy is not growing. because people are paying down debt. It's more important to them. We're not consuming as much. So some few environmental sustainability statistics for you. Over 70% of consumers have some level of care about the environment. Really, people want stability, and people want companies to be responsible, and they want transparency about the environmental claims that you all read when you're buying GreenWorks sprayer at the grocery store. They want to make sure that stuff's real, and that because we've all kind of been burnt by that some way, somehow. You're paying a premium for green products. Come to find out, when they do a study of that product, it's actually worse than what you originally bought. So there's a lot of controversy with that. So consumers want common sense solutions that improve environmental solutions that improve their lifestyle. But in today's world, it has to make financial sense. It can't cost them too much more. They might pay a penny or two more, or maybe 25 cents, but for the most part, people aren't going to pay that premium anymore, at least the majority of the consumers. And so I think it's important as an industry, as a small business, that if you're going to address sustainability and you're looking at developing new products or making environmental claims, that you think of simple and practical. That's all you have to think of, simple and practical. That's what consumers want. So, consumers do want that information readily available. We actually have just made a recent change in our packaging in Canada. We make sterile peat products for row cropping up there, and they have two bags, two plastic bags. The inner bag is where all of the peat is, and then you have an over bag, and that's where all of the printing and information goes. And so we've actually switched to a biodegradable over bag. We reduced our plastic by about 14%, and this is kind of interesting, because this is all driven by the people in Canada. This was not my idea. They've taken ownership and they've taken and ran with it. And so it's good to see that people are being engaged in doing this stuff. But the most important part of this is if you're going to make a change and you're going to make an environmental claim, make sure it's real. Make sure you're transparent. Make sure you tell the consumer why you're doing it and what value it has to them. Whether it's just making them feel good that, they can feel positive about throwing away that plastic bag, that's good. That's a value to them. It gives them pride. Some social sustainability statistics for you guys. In 2010, 31% of corporate executives felt that health and productivity was their top sustainability concern. The executives realized that the environment is important, but people are your greatest asset. And without paying attention to your people, the health, the productivity, that can be a downfall, and that can lead to less margin, less profit, lots of things like that. So, but there's also a fine line when you talk about that. You don't want people to be overworked and disengaged either. So, health programs. Some a little bit more about social sustainability for you. Companies that have health programs, training programs, they have higher returns for shareholders. Over a five-year period, over 20% higher. So they're getting more productivity. They're also finding ways to cut costs. So we'll talk about a few case studies. So Cisco found that recycling their old equipment, basically kind of rebuilding their business model, or at least a portion of it, to address recycling of electronics, actually contributed a lot to their bottom line. Instead of being some area of the business that, you know, maybe breaks even, or maybe you're absorbing costs because you're doing it to, you know, be more environmentally friendly or comply with regulations, it actually became a profit center for them, putting almost $100 million to their bottom line. So thinking about what you can do to maybe recycle, maybe how that can turn into a potential business opportunity and add to your bottom line, is always interesting and something to think about as a business, whether you're small or medium or big business. So you might not get $100 million if you're a small business, but that would be pretty nice. HP, this is kind of to point out being proactive as a business. They realized that there was going to be regulation coming down as far as electronics and what could be used in it. And so they kind of prepared for that, retooled their supply chain, kind of rewrote their products, how they were manufacturing with less lead. Basically, that was the biggest concern. That actually came along, the passage of the regulation. And it saved them a lot of time and cost because they had already done it. They were proactive with it. And so, you know, as a business, I think it's important for all of you to be proactive with this stuff. Don't wait to be forced to do it. Microsoft. Microsoft realized that as they continue to grow over time, that there was definitely a shortage of skilled workers. And so what they did was they went out into their communities and teamed up with junior colleges and community colleges and even universities and started to set up these different programs using their internal employees to train students or future employees on how to use their operating systems. And so literally they basically created a whole pool of qualified future potential employees. And that saves them a lot of money, you know, because they're basically investing in the community. And, you know, they don't have to take the time to internally train all of those people. So IBM, very large company, 320,000 employees work from home now. And they originally did it because they were worried more about environmental concerns. So imagine 320,000 employees commuting to work every day, say 20 miles. That's a huge environmental impact. But that's also a huge economic impact for your employees too, because you're paying for the fuel costs, and we know how fuel costs go. They go up and down and mostly up. So they started to do this over environmental concerns. They basically said, okay, well, you can all work from home, but you have to comply with this, with our values, which say that, you know, the customer comes first. As long as you're getting your work done and the customer is getting what they need, we're very flexible. And they actually realized that they saved over $700 million in just avoided real estate costs because these people were working from home. They also realized that job satisfaction and productivity actually doubled. Sometimes it's nice to sit at home and work in your pajamas with nobody knocking on your door for a meeting. So, New Page. This is the largest manufacturer of coated paper in North America. And I don't know if he's here yet. Bruce is probably not here. But Bruce actually indirectly probably helped with some of this. So he's your keynote speaker with the SFI certification. And so NewPage launched a new product line called Arbor. So it was triple certification, the first of its kind, 30% recycled content in their paper. And this is high-end paper that goes into magazines and different things like that. And so their value proposition to their customers was, you know, what is your brand worth? And they actually saw a 500% increase in sales. And they felt that that would continue over time. Now you look at all the paper, and I know people say that they worry about paper, but the majority of the paper you use is, it's all recycled anyway. So don't feel so bad about using too much paper. So consumers want companies to be honest and transparent. Really, so what we're going to talk about here is communications. You know, consumers want you as a company, whether you're small or medium or large, to be very transparent about making any type of claims, environmentally or socially. And so, about the only thing I can say is be transparent. Do what you say you're going to do. Because there are too many instances where people greenwash and make false claims. And now the SEC is starting to get involved in some of this stuff, and some of the other governmental organizations. And you can actually get a fine for making a false claim like that, for greenwashing. And so I think it's very important that you pay attention to that. And consumers, they want to help. 84% of consumers said that they feel that they can help a company, but companies, for the most part, don't want to listen. And you're starting to see a lot of companies use engagement platforms like Facebook, Twitter, social media to engage their customers, their consumers, and even their suppliers on how they can improve products, co-create new products, improve their business, save money. People want to be involved. And it used to be, you know, we'll build it and they will come. That's starting to change. You're seeing a lot of people, consumers, they want to help you build it. And then they will buy it and they will be loyal if they get a help, because they take some sort of ownership in that. So, this is to, I guess, reinforce transparency. So Greenpeace, I think we all are very familiar with Greenpeace. That would probably be helpful. So Greenpeace occasionally will release a very nasty video, mostly against these large multinational corporations that they feel are destroying the environment some way, somehow. They're not being responsible. And excuse me. So you can see that this is on YouTube. These are the amount of views of these videos. And I was going to show the video, but if any of you have a weak stomach, you would probably want to leave. Because especially the Nestle video, it's very graphic. And I'll just describe it to you. I won't put you through the horror show. So basically, it shows a gentleman, and Nestle makes Kit Kat, so keep that in mind. So Nestle shows a gentleman in an office. He's grinding paper, and it says, need a break, and that's kind of Nestle's Kit Kat thing. And so he goes and he buys a Kit Kat bar, and he opens it up. And I'll take a step back real quick. In Kit Kats, in candy bars, it requires palm oil is one of the main ingredients. Now palm oil, the price has skyrocketed because of demand globally. And a lot of this palm oil is being grown in developing countries, especially in Africa. And these farmers are going in and they're clear cutting the rainforest to grow palm oil. And they're also destroying habitat for chimpanzees. So, to go back to the Kit Kat, he opens up the Kit Kat, and one of the Kit Kats is actually a chimpanzee finger. And he takes a bite of it, and blood squirts everywhere. It is very disgusting. But if you are a consumer and you watch this, you are going to be horrified forever and always think of that Kit Kat. You probably will not want to eat a Kit Kat. So these things tend to be very graphic. Now, Greenpeace does serve a purpose, and that's to get companies to change that won't listen. And so what I encourage you to do as an industry, and I say this together, is if you're having environmental groups come to you and attack you or say you're destroying the environment, they want you to work with them. That's what they really want. And they want their 15 minutes of fame, but they mostly want you to work with them. And the longer you ignore them, the more views of the Nestle video you're going to have. And it only takes one email, one post to Facebook, and Greenpeace finds out that you're unsustainably cutting down forest in somewhere in the United States, and you're turning it into mulch. And I can only imagine what Greenpeace would do for a video. And I don't think you guys want that as an industry, because that would totally damage your brand and hurt sales for everyone. So now on to something slightly brighter, hopefully. We're going to talk about kind of what we're doing to address sustainability as a business, and I'll briefly talk about it. So we've come up with a concept called net positive. So net positive is nothing new as far as a term, but it's probably new to the sustainability context. And when we say net positive, we've defined it as companies have positive and negative impacts, both environmentally and socially, through their policies, processes, and products and people. And so our goal as a corporation is to be a net positive company. Now, that's all well and great to say that we want to do that, but how do you do it? That's the challenge. And so one of the things that we've identified, and all of my time flying around the world, spending time with all of our people and facilities, we've identified basically seven main priority areas or material issues to us. So energy, water, waste, energy, transport, supply chain, and sustainable product design. And all of these things we feel are important to creating a stable environment around our business, reducing our risk. Now, for a small business, it could be energy is your biggest risk. It could be water. It could be securing raw materials to make your product. And only you know what you can do for your business. So, reduce, reuse, recycle. So we've saved about $350,000 a year in reducing energy costs, water costs, so basically utility costs, but also some packaging costs too. And what you guys can do, I think, is as an industry, is look at where you can save money, where you can reduce your risk as a business, as an industry. Some of the things that you can do, like I said, energy, water, waste. Waste is a big thing. A lot of times we don't pay attention to it when we drop something into the waste basket and where it goes. Some of the tools you can probably start to look at as an industry, without going into a lot of detail, life cycle assessment. So basically, life cycle assessment is taking a product and looking at the environmental impacts from raw material extraction all the way through end use and disposal. And you can look at it in a lot of different ways. You can look at it purely from an energy standpoint. You could look at it from a transportation standpoint, toxicity. And the goal for that, it could be a couple of things. Either you're looking to save money throughout your supply chain, or you want to do a comparison and you want to make a solid environmental claim. So maybe you're doing it on some wood versus another wood, or something that you're competing with in the industry, and you feel that your product is more environmentally friendly. So you do a life cycle assessment, and that's part of being transparent and making the proper claims and not greenwashing. Is you look at it, you do the study, you do the comparison, you collect the data, and then you disclose it. Other things you can do, supply chain, employees, community products. There's lots and lots of things that you can do as a business. And I can't tell you what is material or a priority to your business specifically, and not without spending a fair amount of time learning about what you do and doing audits and analysis. And there is no one-size-fits-all for sustainability. And I guess my recommendation to you is if you're going to do it, only you can really do it, because only you know what can reduce your risk as a business. Nobody else can tell you that, because nobody knows your business better than anybody. And so I can only give you the tools and the areas to look at. You have to take it from there and investigate how you can do it. Now, I know that's difficult for a small business. And like I said, if I can help you, if you have questions, you know, feel free to ask. I'm more than willing, because to me, this is all very important for all of us. Because if we want to continue to be competitive in a global economy, and we want to create more jobs, I think sustainability is a part of it. If you want to protect your business and your investment, if you started it from the ground up, you probably want to look at sustainability somehow. A couple other things to maybe help with that. I recently attended a corporate social responsibility class at Harvard Business School, and it was very eye-opening to me. And I never really understood the difference between corporate social responsibility and sustainability. And in my opinion, they're really not anything different. So if you hear corporate social responsibility, are you doing corporate social responsibility, or are you doing sustainability? There's really not much difference. So what they talked about was there are three theaters towards to corporate social responsibility. Theater one would be the philanthropic, the charity. And really the goal of that is to tie it to your business. So if you're going to donate money, small business, medium-sized business, large business, you find a way that it's going to benefit you long-term. So if you realize that there's going to be a shortage of education in your industry, of educated people, maybe you want to find a charity or a nonprofit organization that you can donate money to and give philanthropic support to that will long-term provide you with that resource, those educated or qualified future employees. Theater two, what they talk about is basically energy use, reducing your environmental impact, things that you can do internally. So some of the stuff that I just talked about quickly. Theater three is basically changing the system, changing your business model. And that's for long-term growth. So you try to find a way to rework the system, partner with certain people. I think you can do this as an industry if you choose to too. And you rework your system. And you're doing that because you see an opportunity and you want to be a sustainable business. And you realize that your business models are going to have to change if you're going to continue to be competitive. And so, Theater three is about changing the system. So let's see here. Sustainability is not a burden to the bottom line. These large multinational companies, they're starting to realize that. Originally, I think we all kind of thought that, okay, we're doing all this because we want to be green and there's some PR that we can get out of it. There's real value here. Now, it takes some digging and it takes some time to find that real value, but it's there. And, you know, every penny counts when it comes to that. They also feel that these guys from the Harvard Business Review, anyway, feel that innovation, sustainability is going to drive innovation and new products in the future. And if you don't pay attention to it, you're at a competitive disadvantage. And, you know, you look at the world today, China, India, Brazil, we have to find ways to innovate. We have to find new models. And so sustainability can help drive that if you use it correctly and you understand it and you understand your business and the industry. So really, that's it. And if you want more information about what we're doing, please go to check out our sustainability website. And I hope this was helpful. I know it's actually quite a lot of information, but I hope that there are some tools that you guys can take, small business, industry, that that will help you. And if it does, then I've accomplished my mission. So if you guys have any questions, let me know.
I think in general what you're saying is interesting, but I work on sustainability programs with hospitals, electronic companies, electronics recycling, Tivola National Electronics. We hold the largest electronics recycling show in the world, and we just held it recently. But with this group here, someone like yourself, what needs to happen is you need to cite for these folks specific examples of sustainability programs that some people have put in place that they can model after. Otherwise, they leave here with, okay, well, where do I start? It's hard. When you go into a hospital, as I've done, or you go into an electronics company, and you've already helped put programs together, you can specifically show these people what to do, how to get started, and they can do something. But, and like I said, I'm not criticizing what you did. You brought out the general idea. But it's hard for people in any industry to get started unless they can model after something. And I think that's what slows the whole process down. I volunteer to do sustainability programs with people out in areas where I live in Northeast Ohio, and trying to encourage farmers and people who own land not to sell their land, but to sell hunting leases, pay for the taxes, and reinvest in the property so that the land isn't lost. It's actually worth it. There are little things like that that people will never think of. It applies to this group as well, I'm sure.
Absolutely. I would agree that there are little things. And, you know, like I said, I can only give you certain tools at this point. I can't say that there is specific business models. Perhaps as an industry, knowing how things operate, we can build one that maybe everybody can start to utilize. But at this point, I guess for me, it's very high level in general. And you know, it's not until you actually walk into the hospital and start to work with those hospitals can you actually build a model for other hospitals to follow. So at this point, it is very high level. I think you make a great point that, Yep.
I think it's a lot of it is suppliers to this industry, which I am one of them. We have a lot of ideas that could be presented to this industry for what you're talking about that can save the environment in a lot of areas and reduce a lot of waste and cost for everybody. Just let everybody that suppliers to this industry have their own program.
Absolutely. I think one of the things, if you're looking at energy, for example, and trying to reduce those energy costs, one of the first things that we ever discovered was there are a lot of incentives if you go to your local utility or your utility provider. and they keep that stuff on their website. Whether it's changing lights or maybe changing an air compressor or things like that, significant amount of rebate savings that can really reduce your payback time. And you can also look at water. Not very many water utilities have that option, but a lot of the energy and natural gas providers, they actually have a lot of those programs. So, any other questions?
Is there any incidents of one company's sustainability efforts conflicting with another company's objectives?
I think story I heard was GE, for example. GE basically told their customers that we are going to push for carbon cap and trade regulation because we are going to we're going to provide the solutions for you to buy from us. Now that's kind of a big risk, and because you could completely destroy your supply chain and hurt revenues and damage relationships, and but they were at least honest about it with their suppliers, who are with their customers, a lot of them who are big energy companies, and so to me that's kind of conflicting because the energy providers, they probably have their own sustainability, whether it's continuing to operate that plant that's been operating for 40 years and trying to continue to be economically sustainable, versus all of a sudden having this cap and trade pushed on by one of your suppliers, so they can make more money off you. I mean, and GE's doing it to, be more green. They're retooling their whole business model to provide solutions for global challenges, whether you're talking about water filtration, efficient engines for airplanes and things like that. So I think that's about the only example that I can really think of on a large scale where there's probably some conflicting sustainability programs and goals. So, any other questions? All right.
Well, I want to thank you for bringing that viewpoint out today.